Quincy Troupe needs no introduction for many of you. I will say, for those of you who are not familiar with him or his work, you are in for a treat. Quincy is a native of St. Louis. He comes back on a regular basis to renew himself with some of that root energy and to renew us with some of that troop energy. He is the author of quite a number of books. I won't go through all of them, but his collections of poetry, you should know at least some of: Snakeback Solos, Skulls Along the River. We know whereof he speaks. Weather Reports. Many of you also know the great classic autobiography as told to Quincy Miles, the autobiography. Soon to be a major motion picture. Quincy continues to write at the same breakneck pace he's always practiced. He is currently consulting on the screenplay for Miles with Charles Fuller, who's writing it. He is working on a new manuscript of poems, tentatively entitled Avalanche, and he is completing his long-awaited novel, so you may see that in 95. Okay, so without anything else that needs to be said, I will say that Whitman says great poets need great audiences. So let's all be great and listen to Quincy Troupe.
It's always good to come home and come to Delphs and come and help work on the magazine River Styx, where they work you like a dog, you'd be sleep, walking around sleep for days afterwards. But it's always a pleasure, it really is. And I just want to say one other thing about this movie. We're really honored that Wesley Snipes is going to play Miles Davis. And we're really honored that he's going to play Miles Davis. And we hope to be through with the screenplay. The first draft will be done by the end of this month. And Charlie, Michael said, Charlie Fuller is the screenwriter. I'm the writer consultant, so we kind of get together and do it. And then he goes off and writes it like a screenplay. I would write it like a poem. So, but he has to do that and put all the cuts and all that in. And so we hope to be through with the the screenplay by March. And so probably sometimes during the summer, this coming summer, you might see people over here filming, So I just want to prepare you for that. I have this new book, and I'm going to read those last. I'm going to read some of my older poems first, and then I'll read this new book last. And it's called Avalanche, and I'll explain it to you what it means. And it's a kind of a conceptual book. It's the first kind of conceptual book that I've written. And in that way, I'd like to talk about it a little bit. But these first poems, I'd like to just read them. Snakeback Solo. With the music up high, boogaloo and bass down, way, way low, up and under. I come sliding on in, mojoing on in, spacing on a riff full of rain, riffing on in full of rain and pain, spacing on in on a sound like Coltrane. Coltrane, Coltrane. And my metaphor is a blues, blues, is a blues. Hot pain dealing blues is a blues action. Guitar voices, whiskey broken, nigga deep in the heart. Is a blues in a glass filled with rain. Is a blues in the dark. Slurred voices of straight bourbon is a blues. Dagger stuck off in the heart of night, moaning like Bessie Smith. Is a blues filling up the wings of darkness. Is a blues, is a blues, is a blues. And looking through the heart, a dream can become a raindrop window to see through, can become a window to see through this moment, to see yourself hanging around the dark, to see through, can become a river catching rain, feeding time, can become a window to see through. While outside windows, flames trigger the deep explosion. Time steals rivers that go on and stay where they are. Inside yourself, moving soon, there will be daylight breaking the darkness to show the way. Soon there will be voices breaking music to come on home by down and up river. Breaking darkness, swimming up river. The sound of Louis Armstrong carrying riverboats upstream on bravados, climbing the rain, feeling the rain, swimming up river, up the river of rain, Satchmo breaking the darkness, his trumpet to the light, flaming off the river's back, speaking to the light, flaming off the river's back at sunset, Snake River's back, River Mississippi, Big Muddy, up from New Orleans to Alton and East St. Louis, Illinois. Cross the river from St. Louis to come on home by upriver. The music swims, breaking silence of miles, flesh leaping off itself into space, creating music, creating poems. And looking through the heart, a dream can become a raindrop window to see through, can become this moment to see through, to see yourself hanging around the dark, to see through this pain as the meaning of bones crawling Mississippi River bottoms, snake pits beneath the snake back solo catching rain, and dreams washed clean by Ajax. But looking through the dream can be like looking through a clean window, crystal prism, the night where I solo now to become the wings of night, to see through this darkness. I solo now to become wings and colors, to become a simple sky break, shattering darkness, to become lightning's jagged sword-like thunder. I solo to become, I solo now to become, with the music up high, up way, way high, boogaloo and bass down, way, way low, up and under. I come sliding on in, mojoing on in, spacing on in on a riff full of rain, river riff full of rain and trains and dreams. Come sliding on in on another riff full of flames, leaning and gliding. I solo, solo, looping and sliding now. I solo, 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 solo.
Thanks. All right, I'm going to read this other St. Louis poem, and I got a couple more to read because Favorita lives across the street from me, and I saw her on Sunday for the first time, and I'm not going to tell how old we is or are. I like to see, I use a lot to use the colloquial, how old we is, you know, but she lived across the street from me, and she said, "I'm Favorita. I was little Favorita then." I said, "I was little Quincy too." And so this poem I'll read after this poem will be dedicated to Favorita. Let me get it together here now. This poem, I'm going to read three pages of it. It was published for the first time in River Styx, so I want to dedicate this. It's dedicated to my mother, Dorothy Smith Marshall, and I'd like to dedicate it to Charlie Marshall and to Jan Castro and Michael Castro, who published this poem for the first time. And it became the title poem of my book, Skulls Along the River. I ain't going to read it all. I'm just going to read three pages of it because it's long.
Up from New Orleans on riverboat.
Up from New Orleans on riverboats, from the Gulf of Mexico, memory carries sweet legacy of niggerland speech, brown tongue bluesing, muddy water. Underbottom spirits crawling, nightmares of shipwrecked bones, bones gone home to stone, bones gone home to stone, river bottomed, underbellied spirits, bones gone home to stone, I say, bones gone home to stone, I say, skulls along the river. And the faces of these faceless bones, unknown, screaming arpeggios of stitched memory in cold light. Cadences of blues shrinking, sun sprays shrieking with every turning of black boned arm clocks. And it is the collected face of memory that wears the metaphor of collected dust. The collected mathematics of lamenting calibrations, hieroglyphics cracking and peeling and curling in stones, dust storms swirling around edges. Bones white as chiclet teeth in memory cloning. The images come locked in whatever time gives them. Death there forever, forever locked in time. Death there forever and forever locked in time. And inside time, we suffer because we must. There is no other way to find beauty. There is no other way to find love. We suffer because we must. There is no other way home to find the memory. And, oh, the skeletons that have passed my cracking eyeballs, seeking true cadence within the lamenting calibrations of music, history, rattling dice bones on their worn-out knees, the already dead scraping earth breath for an even deeper death, the ultimate transmigrating, transmuting, and, oh, you midnight men of peppermint moons, rooster claw soliloquies raking at vision's corner, heroes emerging from sand-blasted history books, grant me leather flesh of your weather-worn wisdom, blood-drenched grave diggers, anthro-city soothsayers. Oh, mellow prophets of crushed grapes and stomped berries, grant me holy syllables of your blues-laced tongues, perfect eardrums. Grant me sacred light of your blues, doo-wopping Mac men. Grant me holy flight of your eagle-winged life. Grant me the tongue of your blues, perfect eardrums. Grant me holy flight of your eagle-winged life. Oh, grant me the tongue living of your blues. I say blues, blues, perfect eardrums, perfect eardrums, perfect eardrums. All right.
Thank you. This is for Favorita, and we lived on Del Mar and Leonard, which has changed considerably now. And so this poem is dedicated to my brother. It's for my brother Timmy, and for Timothy Troop, and for Favorita, who lived across the street from us, knows all the secrets. We used to walk streets of River Rhythm Town, counting cars that passed for nothing else better to do. Warm, cold days now, packed away in straw. And went out home on Del Mar and Leonard streets, living over Joe's supermarket. On weekends, would repeat from our window the same ritual all over again. This counting of passing cars. You took the Fords, Timmy. I took the Chevrolets. But always the pimp's Cadillacs would win. And from our window on Saturday nights, we would watch the drunken fights across the street at Myers Tavern, where black people died with ridiculous ease from street surgeons' knives. Summers brought picnics and barbecues, baseball games, and hot, funky parties where we styled hard, laid off in our bad summer rags. And on warm, idle days on concrete playground courts, I would beat the hell out of you playing basketball until it got dark. In winter, we would bundle up tight in fast, shrinking clothes bought 3 years before when Daddy was making money playing baseball in Batista's Cuba.
are bought when mother was working downtown as a desk clerk at Sonnenfels. And on frozen winter nights, we would fight like two vicious alley cats over who pulled the cover off of who. Afterwards, we would sleep side by side in the dark in our own spilt blood. And if someone was ever foolish enough to mess with either one of us, they had to contend with the both of us, sure enough, righteously stomping 11,000 corns on their sorry asses. But time has worn away those days as water rubs smooth in time, a rough and jagged stone. You took the blues of those days filled with sun, dews, and blood and turned them into rhythms you played superbly on your talking drum, talking drums before you heard the calling of your Lord sanctified. I took that beautiful song you gave to me and turned it into poetry. This poem I give to you now with a brother's deep love. Thank you. That's your favorite reader. It is not who or what you see, but how you see it. The night, the light, woman, rhythm of night lights going on, off in her face. The smile of neon, jewels on fingers. The sound of ash colliding with cotton. The sound tears make falling through blues. Through guitar strings, voices strung by silence, sweet echoes, echoes, the gold-capped dews of a Mississippi black man's grin is not who or what it is. You see but how you see it here, thin or otherwise deep. This life is what you make it, not what you hope it to be, but what it is, right or wrong. What it is, what you make it to be, it is right or wrong. Thin or otherwise deep, a blues or its absence, it is a lyrical deep singing here, a movement of rhythm, it is a blueness painting the night dissonant, the sound of ashes colliding with cotton, is how you hear it and feel it, is not what or who, you either hear it or you do not hear it, but it's how you hear it here is the question here. This poem, that gold-capped blues of that black man's grin, Mississippi, is what it is. The sound tears make falling through guitar strings, colliding with cotton, blues, voices echoing life underwater. This life is what you make it to be. This life is what you make it to be. This life is wedded to death. This life is wedded to death. This life is wedded to death. Life wedded to death. Life wedded to death. Hear it, feeling this life wedded to death. Hear it. Feeling this life wedded to death, this life, yes, wedded to death. Thank you. My father died this past August and this past summer, last summer, and I had to come over for his funeral. And my father had been an inspiration to me, not only me, but a lot of people who knew him growing up here. And so for me, he was a special person. And my father was a great baseball player, probably the second greatest or third best catcher of all time in the old Negro Leagues, behind Josh Gibson. And as I always say, you know, the reason he wasn't the best, he was a better defensive catcher than Josh Gibson, but Josh Gibson hit home runs that are on the moon. See, my daddy only hit 400 feet home runs. And one day he says, why they always talking about Josh? Why they always talking about Josh? Why they always talking about Josh? I was a better catcher than him. I said, Dad, but you ain't got no home runs on the moon. I said, you got to understand that. You got to understand what legend is made out of. It ain't about, you know, catching good. It's about hitting the ball and knocking a hole in the moon's face. Everybody can see that. when it knocks the moon off orbit, you know? I said, you didn't do that. He didn't like that too much. Anyway, this poem is dedicated to him, a poem for my father. And, you know, it's really strange. It was the first parent that I had to die. And, you know, I think about him all the time, you know. You walk down the street and you start crying. You don't even know why you're crying. And you say, oh, God, that's about my father, you know. You know, and, you know, even if you have disagreements, you think you can call him up and just argue. You know, you can argue with a parent, you know, call all kind of names and shit, you know. And, you know, then you make up because you blood, you know. You can do that with your cousins and brothers and stuff, fighting and everything. But, see, y'all been knowing each other since, you know, since you was born. So it's just, it's one of them things that you can't talk about. So I kind of miss him. So I'm going to always read his poem every time I come someplace, go someplace, keep his memory alive. So this poem is called Poem for My Father for Quincy T. Troop Sr. And I should say one thing. This poem tries to focus on the 1940s and late 19, you know, from the war years until the early 50s. And this is what this focus of this poem is, because that's when he was at his zenith. Father, it was an honor to be there in the dugout with you. The glory of great black men swinging their lives as bats at tiny white balls. Burning in at unbelievable speeds, riding up and in and out. A curve breaking down wicket, like a ball falling off a table. Moving away, snaking down, screwing its stitch magic into chitling circuit air. Its comma seam spinning toward breakdown. Dipping like a hipster, bebopping a knee-deep stride. Yes, in the Charlie Parker 40s. Wrist curling like a swan's neck behind a slick black back, cupping an invisible ball of dreams. And you there, father, regal as an African, a boa man, a boa man, a boa man, sculpted out of wood from a sacred tree of no name, no place origin. Big branches branching down into Cherokee and someplace else lost way back in Africa. The sap running dry, crossing from North Carolina into Georgia, inside Grandmother Mary's womb, who was your mother, and had you there in the violence of that red sorrow. Ink blotter news gone now into blood and bone graves of American blues. Sponging rococo, truth long gone as dinosaurs, the Agent Orange landscape of former names. Absent now of African polysyllables, dry husk consonants there now in their place, names flat as polluted rivers. And that guitar string smile always snaking across some virulent American redneck's face, scorching like atomic heat, mushrooming over Nagasaki and Hiroshima, the fever blistered shadows of it all inked as body etchings into sizzled concrete. And you there, father, but you there, father, through it all, a yardbird solo, riffing on bat and ball glory, breaking down all fabricated myths of white major league legends, of who was better than who, beating them at their own crap game with killer bats as Bud Powell swung his silence into beauty of a Josh Gibson home run, skittering across piano keys of bleachers, shattering all manufactured legends up there in lights, struck out white knights. On the risky edge of amazement. Oh, the miraculous truth sluicing through, steeped and disguised in the blues, confluencing like the point at the cross when a fastball hides itself up in a shimmying slide, a curve breaking down and away in a wicked slide grin, curved and posed like the back of an ass-scratching Uncle Tom who, like old Satchel Paige, delivering his famed hesitation pitch before coming back with a hard, high, fast one rising is sometimes slicker, slipping and sliding, and quicker than a professional hitman. The deadliness of it all, the sudden strike like that of the brown bummer's short crossing right, the hook of Sugar Ray Robinson's lightning cobra bite. And you there, father, through it all, catching rhythms of chanaposo balls, drumming like conga beats into your catcher's mitt, hard and fast as cool Papa Bell jumping into bed before the lights went out of the old Negro Baseball League. A promise you were, Father, yes, a harbinger of shock waves soon come. Catch the blues song of wind in your bleeding human hands. Wrap it around your strong, bony fingers, then turn it into a soft nose pen and sit down and write the love poems of your life. Your presence lingers there where light trails off at the edge of shadow. And in a miracle of rainbows and dazzling feathers, suddenly your absence rings in. It's sweet chiming of bell tones, a pandemonium of rapture where your beauty was, baby. Flowers now all over the sky. The other brandy sweet night, I dreamed we was kissing so hard and good. You sucked my tongue right on out my trembling mouth, and I had to sew it back in, baby, in order to tell you about it. Out here where the sky grows wings, the land is broad beneath it, and everywhere I go, space holds me within. Now I want to read some new kind of pieces and talk a little bit. No, I'll read some others out of this old, and then I'll move ahead. Because there's some people here I haven't seen, and might as well do it, you know. James Baldwin was a great friend of mine, and I did the last interview with James Baldwin, and so I want to read you a poem about that. It's not a particularly happy occasion, because when I was there, when I came to St. Paul de Vence, in St. Paul de Vence, he was dying, and his brother told me he was dying, and he only had a couple of weeks. And so it was, you know, he was a wonderful man. We brought him to St. Louis here with Willie Mae Ford at the Washington University. And that was a glorious night. About 1,000 people came, I think, something like that. It was wonderful. And he was a wonderful person. So I want to read this poem for him. Then I want to read this poem that I haven't read. I read only once here, I think. It's about growing older, as we all do. I should tell you a little bit about this piece. The doctor had just come over and told myself and James Baldwin's brother, David, and his other friend who were there, that he only had about 3 weeks to live, or 2 weeks at the most. And so he had this beautiful house in St. Paul de Vence, France, which is in southern France, which is right up above Nice, up in the mountains. It's beautiful there. And so the next morning, we were all so shocked. I mean, everybody knew he was going to die. But, you know, when somebody tells you they got 3 weeks or 2 weeks, it's kind of hard. So I went outside, and I was sitting under this trellis of grapes. He had these grapes, wine grapes, and I wrote this poem. It's called In Jimmy's Garden. This Sunday morning breaks blue clear in St. Paul de Vence. November dew glazing green grass, luminous here where the crown soul of sunlight slants, beam glances of gold across the 300-year-old rooftop of the gentle black man sleeping here, swallowed up by a Macintosh shirt that is a tent wrapped around his vanishing body. But he is beautiful, as this bird-singing valley in southern France is beautiful.
where I hear now a dog barking deep in the muffled distance where tire wheels spin and where they're licking rubber, speech mimicking wind voices, spinning themselves in a constant rush over asphalt, like gushing voices of sea and sand ground up into crushed dreams. And here and now, under this canopied trellis of grape leaves, in summer gone frost brown yellow now, I focus my poet's camera through a pen I am carrying and see these hills wrapping themselves like legs of a sensuous woman around this poem, like similar valleys and mountains in Haiti. And so I transport myself here and now 5,000 miles to that place tortured with hunger, sudden death, voodoo, and wafting smoke, curling up sea green valleys there, and ask for the Hugon's help in delivering this deep sleeping wordsmith shrinking up here. Shrinking up here under the slate gable roof, invisible piranha teeth tearing away his flesh. And here and now, in this early breaking sun blue moment, he is moving past it all to a peaceful place beyond this sweet, miraculous, beyond this sweet, miraculous space, miraculous with poetry, beyond this sweet space, miraculous with poetry, the glory, the poetry of birds and sea sound of wheels fusing their speech, mimicking wind voices, licking rubber over asphalt. And he is moving beyond us all now, even his brother's voice breaking low in his bedroom, mingling with a former lover's murmur, raising in the 300-year-old farmhouse. And we will be warmed by the croissants heating in the ancient oven where the old smiling French woman is bent over now, while above my aging head, brown shriveled grapes die on the vine, prisoners of time and fate, like you, old great wordsmith, mouth on paper of the revolution, like you, your spirit now moving beyond the wings of night, your spirit now moving and fusing with the light.
You know, we all get older whether we want to do it, whether we want to or not. And I remember when I first wrote this poem, and I read a first draft over here about 5 years ago. It wasn't finished then. And I read this poem over here downtown someplace. I think down someplace, and all my friends were in the back, and they said, dang, he ain't talking about me. He ain't talking about me. All the brothers said that. He ain't talking about me. Shit, and they all said, no, he ain't talking about me. He talking about himself. And this poem came out of hearing this old man in a barbershop. I went to this barbershop, and this old man was about 85, 80 years old, and he was sitting there, and he said, he was telling this other man, he said, and I ain't never in my life, never, not one time, not once, not one time ever have I never been, I always could get it up. So I said, that's some bullshit. I said to myself, that's some bullshit. I ain't known no man like that in my whole life. And ain't nobody been existed. Ain't nobody been made like that. And somebody said, oh, man, that ain't true. He said, y'all, that's not true. That's just, I ain't never been able to get it up, not once. Every day I did it, and I ain't never. I said, so I wrote this poem called called Reflections on Growing Older. I sit here now, inside my fast thickening breath, the wipes of my catfish eyes muddy with drink, my rope rasta hair snaking down in coils, salt and pepper, vines twisted from the march of years, pink and ink lines etching my hangdog swollen face, the collected weight of years swelling around my belly, the fear of it all overloading circuits, here and now with the weariness of tears coming on like rainstorms, the bounce drained now from my once liquid strut, a stock like gimpiness there now, stiff as death. My once sleek legs climbing steep stairs in protest now. The power gone slack from when I used to helicopter through cheers, hung around rims like Air Jordan threading rainbow and jump shots that ripped
popped nets into sounds cracking like whips of envious peers. Gone now, the cockiness of that then firm flesh, young and perfect as arrogance, in the belief that hard-ons would swell here forever, with the smoldering hard fire found in a gristle's boning desire, that droops now limp as wet spaghetti or noodles, and that hammerhead drive that once shot ramrod straight into the sweet wet kiss of a wondrous woman's sucking heat wears a lugubrious melancholy now. Like an old frog wears its knobby head croaking like a lonely malcontent. And so I sit here now inside my own gathering flesh, thickening into an image of Humpty Dumpty at the edge of a fall. The flight of my hubris gone now, my sight grown muddy as Mississippi River water. And I feel now the assault of shotgun years, shortening breath. Charlie horses throbbing through tired, cold muscles, slack and loose as frayed old ropes slip from round necks of executed memories that drift in and out like lynched black men. I see now these spirits of irreversible breakdowns, the ruination of my once perfect flesh as medals earned, fighting through holy wars of passage. See them as miracles of the glory of living breath, language pulsating like music through my poetry here, syncopating metaphors turned inside out like truth slipped from the mouth of snake-eyed politicians. Yeah. See it all now as the paths taken, the choices made, the loves lost and broken, those the spirit retains, and the poems lost and found in the dark, beating like drum beats through the heart.
Now I want to read some of these new poems, and I want to explain what this is about a little bit. And all us men know that's true. That's a true poem. We might not admit it with our bravado, you know, but that be true. You know, this new book is called Avalanche, and the way it's set up, and that's why I want to explain, just talk to you a little bit about it. And I brought about 12 of them to read to you, or maybe 10 or 8. A way it's set up is that, and I like to read these poems first here in St. Louis before I read them anyplace else. So these haven't been read anyplace else except one. Two of them have been, but the rest of them haven't been read. The way this book is set up, you know, an avalanche is this huge breaking away of a mountain and it falls down on people or whatever, you know. And the book is constructed like that. And it's the first constructed book that I've put together like that. So the first section is about this avalanche of sound. Now, it's not about an avalanche. That's just a metaphor. But it's like about an avalanche, the whole cacophonous sound of the breaking away and all of that. And so the first section of poems are real cacophonous, really cacophonous, you know. And then the second section is this kind of settling. You know, after an avalanche comes down, it's kind of settles, and you have ups and downs of the energy, you know, because it's settling. It's not settled yet, so it's doing that. And then the third section is serene, because if you fly over an avalanche from an airplane and you look down on it, it's like a still life. It's like a still life, and it's as if nothing happened there. It's as if nothing occurred, you know, because it's already settled. And so those are the three sections of the book. So what I'm going to do, at first I was going to read it because I wanted to end on this avalanche poem, but I'm going to read that first, and hopefully then I'll give you some idea of what is happening. So I'll read this first poem. It's called Avalanche. And I read this poem for the first time over here when I was here visiting, and this poem is dedicated to my good friend Kay Curtis Lyle. It's dedicated to Curtis because we were in the Watts Writers together, and he was the first one to read this poem. Yeah. When I came over to bug him one time over here.
within an avalanche of glory, hallelujah, sky breaks. Spraying syllables on the run, spreading sheets, waving holy sounds. Solo sluicing African bound, transformed here in America from voodoo into hoodoo. Inside tonguing blues, snaking horns. Where juju grounds down sacred up in cards, up in the gritty foo-foo, magical. Where fleet rounds of cadences whirlpool as in rivers. Where memory spins down foaming into dances, like storms swallowed here in a burst of suns. Up in the yeasting blue voodoo, holding the secret clues, mum, inside the mystery unfolding. Up in the caking dish rag of daybreak, miracles shaking out earthquakes of light. Like mojo hands luminous with spangling, and all the vamping blood songs of call and response, the vamping blood songs, call and response. As in the pulpit, when a preacher becomes his words, his rhythms those of a sacred blues man dead outside his door, his gospel intersecting with antiphonal guitars, a congregation of amens, as in the slurred riffs, blues strings run back echoing themselves, answering the call, the voice cracked open like an egg, the yolk running out, the lungs imitating collapsed drums, and he is the rainbow and confluence of sacred tongues, the griot, the devotion of rivers, all up in his hands, all up in his fingers, his call both invocation and quaking sermons running true and holy as drumming cadences brewed in black church choirs. Glory, hallelujah, words, glory, hallelujah, bow spreading from the mouths like Wolfman's mojo, all up in Mahalia Jackson's lungs, howling vows rolled off hoodoo consonants, brewing magic all up in the preacher's run of muddy water, strung all up in the farm, drenched with cold train, riffing all up in miles of Lightning Hopkins mojo songs, blues yeasting lungs of bird, when music is raised up as prayer, healing as June sun, quilted in the big black baby's tongues sewn deep in their lungs as power and blueprinted here in breath of rappers. And this is a poem in praise of continuity. It's a poem about blood coursing through tongues. It's a praise song for drowned voices lost in middle passage. It's a praise song for slashed drums. It's a construct of orikis linking antiphonal bridges. It's a praise song tonguing deep mojo secrets. In praise of the great God's blessing. In praise of healing songs sown in the tongues, inflating sweet lungs into a cacophony of singing. A praise song tonguing deep mojo secrets. And this poem is about music, when music is what it believes it is, holy, when music harmonized, somersaulting in flight, and glory is the miracle poetry sings to in that great getting up morning, within the vortex of wonder, confluencing rivers, light, glory in the rainbows arching like eyebrows across suns, glory in the moonlight staring from a one-eyed cat's head, and I want to be glory and flow in that light, want to be Coltrane solos living in me, want to become wonder birds in flight of my lines, want the glory of song healing in me as sunlight, want a tongue through leaves, metaphor and trees, transform where they seed and stand up here as people in this soil, everything rooted here in blood of mother's flesh, and is the poetry of God in deep forest time, singing and listening, and the music there is green as it also is purple, as it also is orange, brown, and mind-blowing electric banana, as it is red cinnamon, and also again, yes, green, sound ground up against lavender, beneath sunsets fusing crisp blue light, and night here stitched with fireflies flicking gold up against bold midnight, and once again, yes, green as new American dollar bill bills in American some bright summertime or green. And my poem here is reaching for that greenness, is reaching for holy luminosity, shimmering in gold-flecked light where the mojo hand is seeming through high blue mornings, waving like a sequin glove up in the glory of hallelujahs, calling through the inner tube lips of the great God, singing up in the blues root doctors, jack-legging sermons, up in the condolences, mourning death, up in the sunburst of God's glory. I want this poem to kneel down itself before healing, want it to be magic there beneath the crucifixion of light, want it to be praise song, juju rooted, want it to be mojo hand raised up to powers of flight, want it to be tongue of gritty foo-foo feeding, want it to be a congregation slurring amen riffs running back through me to you, the voice raised up here, guitar blues lick holy, want it to be glory hallelujah, call and response glory, want it to be yam song rooted in the bloody river holy, want it to be ground, earth of resurrection in you, in me. The bridge tongue of healing is the drum of this song, and it is reaching out to you to cross over to the sun. It's reaching out to touch your heartbeat there, to become one in the glory, to feel the healing touch, to become one with the glory. This poem waits for you to cross over the heartbeat touch of your healing hands, touching hands, touching hands. This poem waits for you to cross over, cross over. This poem waits for you, yes, to cross over, cross over, cross over.
Thank you. And this poem is in that section. I don't know where. And this poem is not. It's about. It's almost finished this book. But this poem was written when my mother called me, and once this summer, and I was talking to her, and she was so sad. So I said, "What are you sad about, mother?" So we start talking, and she said, "Well, you know, we used to be able to go out on the porches, and we can't go out on the porches no more." And I said, "Well, why?" Because I live in La Jolla now, you know, so, you know, it's like La Jolla, you know, you're like, why you can't go out on the porch? You know, I go out on the porch. And she said, you know, them kids be riding by and shooting people. So you can't go out on the porch. So then I remember, and then I came over to my father's funeral, and I saw that her house was all, you know, had all these bars on them, on the house, you know, these bars all over. And doors, these steel doors, and she was like a prisoner in the house. And so I thought about that, so I wrote this poem for her. And she was sick, so she couldn't come tonight, had a cold. So I wrote this poem called Porches.
His crystalline waterfalling notes and cards. Philly Joe accenting and holding up the beat while Paul Chambers anchors everything to that boom, boom, boom bass tone of drum bomb suites. What is it has sucked away the laughter, the bright sun splash of your smile that used to flash as when a curtain was pulled back to reveal a strobe light, mother? And I think it has something to do with Saturdays in summer. Saturdays when everyone used to sit out visiting on porches to escape the heat, the sweat box sweltering heat that suffocates everyone in the prisons of their home in downtown St. Louis. When the air conditioner is off in hellhole July and August. Back then when front and back porches used to be jammed tight with glistening black bodies telling tall tales and drinking whatever their pocketbooks could afford. Back then, before drive-by shootings wiped everyone clean off porches like an eraser wiped clean a blackboard at the end of a school day. Back before new bigger Thomas, teeny boppers, armed refugees from gangster rap, their heads twisted on sideways like their baseball caps, defined themselves by shooting lead-spinning Uzis at anyone who moved or stood still, any place and anywhere where 9mm brain young people might pop up and start tattooing the life from bodies, young or old, mothers or fathers, sisters or brothers or grandmothers or aunts, grandfathers or cousins, uncles or just plain friends or whoever might move or might not move, but find themselves somewhere when rage comes down on some sad fool, armed to the teeth, murder in his brain, and no feeling in his gizzard heart. Mother, Nana, is that why I hear this sadness in your voice now over the phone in sweltering summer, trapped in the enclosure of your dark house now with no drapes pulled back to let the sunlight in, trapped behind steel black gates clanged into place, covering your door, prison black bars grilling your windows, closed and sealed, and you there, Nana, in your uptight, airless space, inside and outside, where the tears are endlessly falling, there, where the loveless heat and gunfire will not go away.
Thank you. Now I'm gonna read these last few poems hope that you enjoy these. I was telling John Dressel that I tried to create this new form. It's in 21 lines, and it's like 21 lines, and I call them tercetinas. And I call them tercetinas because they're 21 lines, seven stanzas, or three lines a piece. And I have one, I have two, and I don't like to rhyme poetry, but when you create forms, you got to rhyme. So this, I'll read that one toward the end. This poem is one of those, but it's not rhymed. I have about 10 that are not rhymed. I've written these in the last 2 months. It's called At the Edge. And the whole idea of the edge is that I'm living at the edge now of the continent where I live, because I live right by the ocean. I have come to the edge of this moment, shivering in light. The shadow of a man there, holding his age tight like a wilted rose. In his deep, cool eyes that resemble two caged birds, grows and contracts, drapes its lengthening silence across the ledge of a poet's imagination. As words, as metaphor come to life, as time washing in waves raises question of the land's flight, the possibility of ebb and flow at the edge of a nation's limits, its wingspan touching two waters there, east and west, silhouettes of cruising dark clouds gathering over gunfire, slink themselves across this moment, framed in light, ink their wrinkling lines across a stark white floor, in a white room where an old man sits holding a memory of gloom in his hands, a torn photograph of himself when he was young, while outside in the west, the sun is a cat's eye closing in a purple beige sky, the color of the old man's rug, shade lengthening now at the edge of a nation's imagination, the light fading with sunset into shadows on the floor. The flip side of time. There is nothing on the flip side of time but more time. Yawning like a cat's wide open mouth of space above us, around us, dilating like our mother's womb just before we came out screaming, catching our breath and found ourselves breathless, bent out of shape with rage after being cooped up asleep for so long. And now all this searing light here, where before all was darkness, and now this slap that wakes us up with such a start, as if it were necessary, since most of us sleepwalk all our lives until death anyway. And sometimes we find ourselves somewhere hanging from the spur of the moment, barely awake, caught between twilight and pitch black. Perhaps there, hanging from the spur, hanging from the spur of some island somewhere off the cowboy boot of Italy, looking at a full moon submerged beneath the crystal blue green waters of the Mediterranean and Ionian seas, laughing there like an Alka-Seltzer tablet, wrinkling at the bottom of a clear, full glass of water, our eyes telescoping from above as if we could decipher the mystery of that smile. But then mystery and magic is what pulls our lives toward meaning. The beauty and wisdom discovered inside all heartfelt joy. What the journey, the hours reveal, the poetry there in every moment. La Jolla. Living out here on the edge of the Western world, where most sunsets leave vivid stains on the black line separating the Pacific from the ocean of flight. Above it, where time stretches as a peacock's tail feather over a landscape shimmering with bright rainbows, streaking through green light, luminous with complexions, where kite strings split in half a swallowing sky, deep as music heard somewhere, buried in the distance and is an echo of light reverberating throughout these
wondrous valleys and mountains, while overhead hot air balloons cruise over underneath the serrated edges of white or gray clouds that look like battleships, and where the eye locates now on the brow of some precipice, a glass house that is an atrium and wondrous beyond all comprehension, where the sky is the roof and the Pacific a glittering blue veranda swelled with surfers and sea lions and salt waves terracing in, one rabbit foaming wave after another. Swimmers bobbing up like apples in a tub at a Halloween party just offshore, while up in verdant hills, golden with music and light, runners jog up and down streets as people behind walls and signs reading armed response sit fingering triggers of weapons, eyes uptight as just two fired bullets. Back to the dream time. Back to the dream time, through rivers of sound, I swim through metaphors of blues rising from gruff throats of shamans there, like smoke, their voices slurred over frayed guitar strings, like balm healing, the cascading syllables dropped from the sunstone of their speech, words dropped like civet heads from the hook beak of a giant prehistoric bird blowing fierce wind. And as if by magic, I have come here to the very edge of language to see shadows wrinkling like a winged scarves undulating sideways, like a swift snake crossing the desert of imagination. Have come here to drop the blues notes of my trumpet voice into this snake pit of silence, which is the sheerest void of darkness anywhere, and where even the sun is a well-kept secret, and the moon wears a face so inscrutable the light doesn't even know its own editing. Here in this place of transparent echoes, where vowels roll off tongues like muffled blasts of landmines tattooing the silence of dream time, here and the light on the other side of waking up there, besides a trickster of a man called Miles, who knew no contradictions anywhere in his life of a bitch's brew, his spirit hung hip, bop slick from the magic of his voodoo. Lyrical phrasing, the voice edited back to almost an absent whisper to that of a shaman who knows time is a fixed mystery pulsating wherever it goes. So those are the ones, and I'm going to read this last poem, and it's a part of this book. Oliver Jackson is from St. Louis, and is on the cover of that painting. He's one of the great painters in the world now, and we've been friends a long time. So I want to end with this poem, because he and I, you know, are good friends, but this particular moment occurred in Skates in Berkeley, which is this beautiful bar, and when you look across, you look out through these windows, and you see San Francisco across the bay. And it's just wonderful, you know. It's just one of these one of the most wonderful things that you could imagine. And you look out there and you drink margaritas. And by the time we sit there for 3 hours, we'd be loud and wrong and unabashed. We'd be loud and wrong and unabashed looking at this view. And people be like hoping that we leave, you know. You know, because, you know, I don't see him that much, so we'd be so exuberant, you know what I mean? I'd be so happy to see him. He'd be so happy to see me because he lives in Oakland. So we'd just be out there cacophonous, you know. Anyway, this poem came out of that one of those meetings. We've had many, and this poem comes out. It's called The View from Skates in Berkeley. And he went right here to Washington University, graduate school. Oh, to Wash U. The View from Skates in Berkeley for Oliver Jackson, homeboy and painter. The clouds were mountains that day, behind the real mountains, sideways from San Francisco, across the Toss Bay. The beauty we saw from Skates in Berkeley was real there, stretched out behind sailboats, the wind-driven waves bucking like rodeo horses carrying cowboys, breaking across the frothing gray water like sand dunes rippling across an empty expanse of desert. Mirrored and beautiful here near sunset, we looked out through the wide open windows and took in the view. Unbroken from here, under sinking sunlight, the hills breast, the gulls resembling small planes banked over the waves, searching for fish they snapped up in their beaks under fleecing clouds, streaming up high, crossing the jet stream. The prickling mist hung low over Angel Island like the day after too many drinks fogged up your head in an afternoon sunlight on a day further back in memory, in cobwebs than you care to remember, but there anyway, as a still life you clung to once, deep in a long gone memory. The skyline changing now behind the tumbling clouds, the architecture trembling through the mist of the shining pearl by the bay, grown up from split open gums of the land like chipped shark teeth or tombstones leaning white and bright into the light, shimmering like the friendship of this meeting is luminous here because we knew we were what we always thought we were. Finally, homeboys at last, laughing like joyous paint in sprayed mist, the fog overhead hung low over Oakland, thick as a mattress where you laid down your head full of dreams and painted images in full view of the Bay Bridge, stretching like one of your elegant lines through our view. Here, outside Skate's window, the sun plunging like one of your faces into rabid wash of gray waves, canvas, wind slapping salt tears across our faces, creased as the American flag is streaked with a rainbow of colors. Here, where we were what we always thought we were. On this day, when the moment kicked up, yes, the water surging like our dreams, and we were riding these bucking horse waves, breaking across the doom foaming waters, riding the dooming foaming waves, mirrored and beautiful. We were strong as we always knew we would be. Our view unbroken from here, in Skates, under the dazzling sunlight of our dreams, streaming across the jet stream. Yes, high up in the turbulent afternoon of our heads, light and luminous, we were homeboys, Oliver, on this shimmering, rare day filled with flight. Homeboys, Oliver, on this shimmering, rare day filled with light. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. One more.
I read you the last poem in this book. Now, you know, this is a weird poem. Since you asked for it, I wasn't going to read it. No, let me explain this poem to you. It's called Following the North Star Boogaloo. I wrote this poem in New York. It was one of the last poems I wrote in New York. And this poem came about because one day I came out of my house and I was following these brothers, these little five, these about seven little brothers with the Master Blasters. So they was talking so much shit, you know, they was talking so much shit. I followed them for about eight blocks. And I was just picking up, you know. I was just listening to everything they said. So finally, one of them turned around with his cap like this. He turned around and said, "Man, is you the police?" He said, "You the police?" I said, "No, I'm a poet." He said, "A what?" I said, "A poet, you know, like a rapper." "Oh, you're a rapper." I said, "No, yeah, a poet." He said, "Oh, yeah?" He said, "You writing a rap about me?" I said, "Yeah, I'm stealing little lines y'all talking." And so he said, "Yeah." So they really start talking then. So we went and sat on a bench, and then I left them after about. And a lot of this poem is my voice, their voice, things they said, and the voice of history. You know, voice of history. So it's called Following the North Star Boogaloo. And it's the last poem in that book, Weather Report. From Miguel Agarin. Following the North Star Boogaloo, the rhythm takes me back to where music began to percolate language like coffee in another form. Back before Frederick Douglass laid it down heavy on Abe Lincoln, when music was breakdancing, old Hottentots throwing down mean as Bojangles ever did. Now jump far through history's dice game. Pick up the steps of James Brown, Michael Jackson, moonwalking the old blues, talking about your mama. Now fast forward down the lane. Pick up the dance of five brothers skateboarding the court. Out in the open, one closes the break after taking it to the hole off the coast to coast, doing a 180-degree fire slammer jammer dunk before they all high-five and glad hand after stamping their footprints all up in the paint, up in this poet's word dribble, a drummer's paradiddle, word up, yo, bro, hip-hop, rapper, skateboarding, the go-go out in the open court of macking the Holy Ghost down. Hey, you diddle-diddle, voodoo griot, take me back to when I was black and hidden proud out on the slick bop thoroughfare, back before the mean homeboys rode snarling duck waddle down the middle, eyes empty with death, before the alley-oops wore their lives, chips on shoulders as in stratospheric attitudes, hung dip from wall to wall, chain gold, cap bills on heads quacking sideways, muscling up bow master blasters, checking out rebops, chilling dead up in the cut, fresh as death after more money. Check it out, bro. Pharmaceutical wizards making seven figure bank accounts do somersault. It's no sweat. It's rolling in so fast for crack, and it ain't nothing but a hole in the wall. For homeboys, cash and carry, cold 16-year-olds who can't count nothing but greenbacks sliding off the screen and roll. They helicopter after dipping and rolling down the middle, high up above the paint. Their footprints walking on space up over your face, hang gliding to the basket like praying mantises. So fresh, they make poop butts faint, slamming faster than a high-fiving glory. 180 degrees of schoolboy legends, saints unfolded in prime-time memory. So roll it back, Cold Jack, before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter and leave Air Jordan's footprints in your face game as the baddest one in town. Before they change up the shake, before they change up the shake and bake, jam up the sky again with a new phenom, double clutching up there in space like a Ferrari stretching out, flat out burning up German Autobahns, changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. But hey, young bro, flash the dice roll back through shit to when the big O was jackknifing through all them bodies out on the court, to when Goose Tatum was shimming magic down in the middle, down in the paint, as Roy Haynes jitterbug like a magician, hula-hooping the ball around him before fast-forwarding to Dr. J, Julius Irving. And did we ever think we'd lose these hoodoo guys to old-age homes for round-ball, rawly new-age homeboys not even knowing who they are? And do they even know about Jonestown, all them bloated bodies cracking beneath the sun? And did they ever hear about the North Carolina astronaut David Skywalking Thompson jamming out in the open off the fly, helicoptering to round ball heaven off the motherfucking coast to coast before he took the fall for all that shit he snorted up his nose before hitting the pipe that took him right on out like a blown light bulb, way back before Kenny Anderson was even a glint in his parents' pick and roll eyes, before he skateboarded off the juju fake, picked up his dribble like magic, then rose up in space like hallelujah, 4th of July glory, before dropping a deuce or a tray, quick as pickpocket off the slide by a sleight of hand trick, eased on by like Mojo with his yo-yo pitter-patter, now you see me, now you don't, yo bro, who done it, poor guy got caught in Kenny's schoolyard voodoo, jumped back in the alley, say what, did you see that motherfucking bad boy Sky, past where it all started, somewhere back before language followed the North Star Boogaloo, dancing back when they were ham-boning the black bottom for fun, back then in the alley, when homeboys picked cotton, played the dozens. I hate to talk about your mama, she was a good old soul, but she got a two-ton pussy and an iron asshole, and your daddy got a dick big as a motherfucking toothpick. Say what you say? Say what you say? Say what? Word. When we knew ourselves through songs, through what we saw alive in homeboys' eyes, through love, through what it was we were before, commercials told us how to move and groove, who to love, when we did it all and had fun and knew the heroes, new and old, and never confused dope for the bomb, back before we fast-forwarded to integration, into the 60s on a bullshit tip, lost ourselves in the fast-forwarding 70s and 80s in the cloning Xerox machines before Kenny Anderson skateboarded his prince of a hip-hop round ball game, break rapping all the way to round ball legend up north, south of the voodoo connection, north of where we entered from Africa.
Thank you.